from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Californians have been changing their clocks twice a year for nearly 7 decades after voters approved a state act establishing daylight saving time. But Proposition 7, which appears on this November's ballot, could end that practice by authorizing the state legislature to make daylight saving time permanent. Those in favor say a year-round daylight saving time would eliminate sleep disruptions and lower health risks like heart attacks and strokes. But skeptics say darker winter mornings could lead to more traffic accidents and put California out of sync with other states. We'll discuss the pros, cons, and history of daylight saving time. That's next, after this. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. As part of our ongoing election 2018 coverage, we're going to talk this hour about California Proposition 7. If approved, Prop 7 would allow lawmakers to make daylight saving time year-round in California, provided that federal law is amended to allow such a change. Supporters say a permanent daylight saving time would save energy, though critics disagree, and lower the health risks associated with the twice-yearly time shifts. But opponents say winter mornings would become too dark, and they worry about the logistical costs of being out of sync with other states. We'll discuss the measure and the history and future of daylight saving time. And joining us first is Daniel Venton, reporter and editor for KQED Science. Daniel, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. So what we're going to have on the ballot is just presumably going to pave the way to federal approval, or would have to have that in the picture.
That's right. It would be the first step in a three-step process. Voters enacted the year-round or the daylight saving time situation that we have right now by proposition, so it also needs to go back to the voters if there's going to be any change. If Prop 7 passes, it would give the state legislature the ability to make changes. They'd have to pass whatever they want by a two-thirds vote. And then it would still need to go to Congress and be approved at the federal level.
But at the federal level, they'd have to actually repeal Proposition 12, going back to 1949, which established
it. That's right.
Yeah. So we've got kind of a manifold process here, to be sure. Tell us, though, I mean, if you could break it down for us. I said something in the introduction about this, but how you see the argument on certainly those in favor, and we're going to hear actually from the author of the bill in a moment, but those opposed as well.
What's interesting is I spoke to dozens of people for a story I reported for the station about Prop 7, and everyone who I spoke to liked the idea of year-round daylight saving time. People said that they didn't like the disruption in their sleep schedules. They didn't like having dark evenings in the winter. But when you look at the endorsements from newspapers, they are largely against the passage of Prop 7.
Well, in fact, I think the LA Times said they support it because it would allow this to be an ongoing debate. But closer to home, the Sacramento Bee said it would be bad for business.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of parents don't like the idea of having such dark winter mornings because it would mean that their kids would go to school in the dark.
Well, at this point, any sense of where this is headed in terms of polls or any fix on that?
You know, there's not a lot of money being spent on for this proposition. And so the last time I checked, I couldn't find any polling data.
Well, we're appreciative of your being with us, Danielle, and we're going to follow up with Kansan Chu in just a moment, who has actually written the bill. But you can stay with us here?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me actually bring Kansan Chu. I think we have him on the line now. He's a California Assembly member, represents the 25th District, which includes Fremont, San Jose, and Santa Clara, and he's the author of Prop 7. And Assemblyman Chu, I guess really the spurring of you to sponsor this was those in your district hearing from older people who weren't sleeping right and hearing from families who weren't handling the morning that well with their kids. That was it mainly?
That's right. Good morning, Michael.
Thanks for
having me here. Yes, this is a really constituent-driven bill that they brought to my attention. Was actually my dentist. He said that when people losing an hour of sleep in spring, their heart attack rate actually increases during that week, and also the car accident and work-related accident also take up during that week. And a lot of young parents, parents with young kids, they hate it because they have to put their kids to bed an hour earlier so they can get up an hour earlier next morning. And that sometimes is a struggle that could last for more than a week.
Wouldn't this be difficult to implement, though, even if it's approved at the federal level, because we're not necessarily in sync with other states and so forth?
Well, it really depends on how you look at it. We're not the whole state has the same time zone from East Coast to West Coast. So we are, you know, there's already an differences there. And also Arizona and Hawaii, they don't switch back and forth. Florida just passed the law to keep on the daylight saving time year-round. So their Senator Marco Rubio has a bill in the Senate, and it was co-sponsored by my congressman, Ro Khanna. So it's a bipartisan issue. Both California Democrat and the California Republican Party endorsed this bill. And many of the newspapers like L.A. Times, Santa Barbara Times, also endorsed this bill.
Canson Chu, again, is California Assembly member representing the 25th District, and he authored Prop 7, and you, presumably, Assemblyman, would like your constituents and people throughout California to vote in favor.
Definitely.
Okay.
Well, yes, on Proposition 7.
Good to have you with us, and I appreciate your being with us this morning. And we're going to get into a debate and hear some of the history of daylight saving time, which personally I found kind of fascinating. Dr. David Prerow is with us. He's the author of a book called Seize the Daylight, The Curious and Contentious Story of Daylight Saving Time. Good to have you with us. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
And we're also going to welcome Michael Downing, who's a creative writing professor at Tufts University, author of Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Saving Time. Welcome, Michael Downing.
Oh, I'm happy to join you, Michael.
Yeah, let me ask you, first of all, you talk about it as being madness. Why is it madness?
Well, you know, to start with, confusion breeds controversy. And the whole idea of losing or gaining an hour is such, at best, a philosophical proposition. That the confusion over clock time versus real time versus sun time has long plagued both most Americans and the Congress for more than 100 years. So there has daylight saving has basically been blamed for or credited with almost every disease, social problem, and possible social benefit under the sun. It's an idea that Americans have never fully understood, which is really epitomized by the California legislation, which is that most people who oppose daylight saving now want to have it full year.
But when the author of that proposition says to us it certainly helps health risks and, I mean, states it as definitively that it's for the better of our health and for many other factors that have to do with, shall we say, not being as concerned about dangers that are out there, public safety issues and so forth when it's darker.
Well, you know, I think it depends on what time of day we're talking about and what time of year. The problem with daylight saving has always been that it works incredibly well as conceived during the long days of summer when we have as many as 15 hours of available daylight. But come December and January, even in sunny California, cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles only have 10 hours of available daylight. So pushing the clocks forward will mean, you know, for San Franciscans, they won't see a sunrise in those months until about 8:30 in the morning, Los Angeles until 8 o'clock. And if it happens that the states in your time zone have to follow you, which is probably what would happen to Portland and to Oregon and to Washington, Seattle and Portland wouldn't be seeing sunrises until 9 o'clock. We just can't create enough daylight to make sense of daylight saving during the winter months.
Let me go to Dr. Prerow, and I'm going to talk with both of you about the history, too, which, as I said, I find really fascinating. But, David Prerow, where do you stand on this proposition and why?
Well, I think what Michael said was correct, that it works very well in the summer, and we've extended it. We've extended it. We originally had it for 6 months. We extended it to 7 months and 8 months. And I think that's a reasonable amount of time. And I was actually involved I was a consultant to the two congressmen who or proposed the last extension to daylight saving time, and the original proposal was to extend it to the end of November and the beginning of March. And when we looked at it, we found out when you did that, you had very dark mornings at the beginning and the end of that period, and there would be a lot of negative effects of that. So instead, that extension made it to 8 months, which is the second week in March till the first week in November. And I think that's a reasonable thing. Once you get into the middle of winter, as Michael said, you're going to get sunrises very, very late, and that's a very big problem for a lot of people.
What about energy? I mean, there's the argument that you hear that it actually saves energy, but some studies show that daylight saving time actually increases, diminishing of energy. In fact, when we get into history, we can talk about when Nixon was president, and because of the OPEC oil situation, he decided to essentially change it to permanent daylight savings time. That lasted about 11 months of the 16 months because there were so many complaints. But I want to go to the heart of this. How do you see it, Dr. Perot?
Well, I think daylight saving has always been found to save energy. And even when we did the last extension in 2007, the U.S. Energy Department did a study of the effects on energy at the very edges of the extension at the beginning of March and the beginning of November, and they found that even at that part of the year there was some benefit, but not as much as in the middle of summer. And I think if you extend daylight saving time to the middle of winter, the energy savings would even be less.
Can we get you in on this, Danielle Venton?
Yeah, you know, The most recent studies indicate that using daylight saving time or using standard time, the energy savings is kind of a wash. There can be a small benefit, but concerns about energy savings shouldn't be what drives voters on this proposition.
What should drive voters, or what does drive voters as you see it, Danielle?
You know, they need to consider what they want their daily schedules to look like.
What about all the arguments about health? How do you read those?
I spoke to a couple of biologists for my reporting on this proposition, and our circadian rhythms do get thrown off by the springtime, spring forward. And so we do see that Monday in particular, following the spring forward switch from standard time to saving time, we see more traffic accidents, we see more heart attack, we see more stroke. But on the other, hand, having more light in the evenings means some health benefits that people are out exercising and recreating, and there's fewer traffic accidents in the evening because if people are driving home, they have a little bit of daylight.
There are about 68%, I'm reading, of countries throughout the world that actually rely totally on Mother Nature.
Yeah, it's industrialized nations in the Northern Hemisphere have been the ones to adopt using daylight saving time in part of the year most strongly. But most countries don't switch their clocks back and forth biannually.
Let's find out what our listeners have to say on this. I'd like to have you weigh in. And as I said, I want to go into the history, too. But if you have strong feelings about this or if you have questions, you can join us now at our toll-free number, and I invite you to do that. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Welcome your involvement in the program, and again, you can join us at 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website at kqed.org/forum and click on the segment, or tweet us. Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I know there are a lot of personal reactions to going full-time to daylight savings time in terms of your own inner clocks, biologically or otherwise. And so we'd like to hear what you have to say. Danielle Venton with us, reporter and editor for KQED Science, and Dr. David Prerow, author of Seize the Daylight, The Curious and Contentious Story of Daylight Saving Time, and Michael Downing, who's a creative writing professor at Tufts and wrote a book called Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Saving Time. And let me go right to the historical question here with you, Michael, since you take it up in your book. You're talking about the real big reason that moved this forward, at least in the United States, was commerce.
Yeah, that's right. The first and most important lobby for daylight saving in the United States was the Chamber of Commerce. What they realized as early as 1915 is that if you gave Americans an extra hour of daylight at the end of the day, they would stop and shop on their way home. And big city retailers, particularly the big department stores who were so powerful early in the century, saw the possible benefits of this. And as soon as we had our first experiments with it, they saw a tremendous uptick in sales. That has never gone away as a lobby. The Chamber of Commerce on behalf of retailers has been the principal lobby behind every extension of daylight saving that David Perot was talking about earlier, from 6 months in 1966 to 8 months today. And the numbers are not small. Let's just take a simple industry. You know, sports have always profited by daylight saving because people have more light at the end of the day. We leave our houses and we go out and play sports. The golf industry is a fantastic supporter of daylight saving because, of course, you can't illuminate golf courses. They're too big. And so by 1986, the golf industry said one extra hour of daylight, an extra month of it, was worth $450 million in additional greens fees and equipment sales. The same goes for the barbecue industry, the gardening industry, and the home repair industry. You give Americans more light at the end of the day, we really do leave our houses.
But if we want to go back historical origins, we go to Ben Franklin, who, of course, was in France and Paris as an ambassador of the United States, and who realized when he got up in the morning that it made a lot of sense in terms of saving candle tallow costs and all the rest of that.
That's right. Ben Franklin almost invented daylight saving, like he almost invented lightning, apparently. He noticed, as you remarked on, this waste of what he thought was a natural resource early in the morning. But because the world was not yet on clock time largely, he couldn't invent daylight saving. But when William Willett, a British architect, noticed the same thing early in the 20th century, the world was on clock time, and it was Willett's proposal which really became the foundation for the daylight saving program we have now. He thought it was a terrible waste that people were sleeping through those early summer sunrises and losing that hour of natural resource. And that's really what was behind Willett's project, was to push people outdoors for health reasons, as well as the possible savings that could be seen in terms of domestic energy consumption.
And I have to tell you, there are a lot of fascinating stories in this whole history. I mean, stories that really engage and compel interest. But let me go back to Dr. David Perot on this history. I mean, we saw for the first time extended daylight savings time during the Roosevelt administration, and it really was largely, well, to save energy during wartime.
Yes, well, it was first we put it in World War One, as every country on both sides of the war did, and it started out, even though Willard had the idea, as Michael mentioned, it was Germany who put it, daylight savings time in first to save energy for the war, and as soon as the British heard that the Germans had done it, a month later they put it in as well, and then every country on both sides of the war did it. And then the same thing happened in World War II. So when less than 2 months after Pearl Harbor, we put in daylight saving time to save energy for the war.
And again, as I alluded to before, in the Nixon administration.
Yes, that was actually a very pertinent situation for the current Prop 7, because that was a peacetime, the only peacetime use of year-round daylight saving time nationally. And that was in the 1970s. We had an energy crisis, and the Congress and the President were looking for ways to save energy, and one was to extend daylight saving time. So they extended it for a two-year period. Well, what happened was, the winter of 1974, when it was first put in, it became so unpopular because people didn't like getting up in the dark, going to work in the dark, and particularly they didn't like sending their kids to school in the dark. And so it was so unpopular that even though it was only put in for a two-year trial period, Congress canceled the second year of winter daylight saving time, and they still had extended daylight saving time, but they just had extended from 6 months to 8 months, not for the full year as it was intended. So the only time that we really tried year-round daylight saving time, it was proved very unpopular and was immediately taken out. And that might have some pertinence to the current proposal.
Well, I want to get back to the current proposal, even though I love some of these stories with daylight savings time. I mean, they're fascinating. There was actually a case here in California back in 1997, a manslaughter case that was decided because of daylight savings time. And one can go through the list of these things, but I know we're really going to focus on Prop 7, and let's do that, and we'll find out what you, our listeners, have to say. Some of the legislators in the state have said things on the Republican side, ain't broke, don't fix it. It would cause too much confusion. We've heard from another state senator that it's maybe there are better and more, on the Democratic side, better and more important things to focus on and be more concerned about. But there seems to be certainly a strong consensus of people who feel that this is the way that we should go. So let's go to our callers, and let's begin with you, Joseph. You're on. Morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
Surely.
I'm an opponent to seven. I'm old enough to have lived through those early school mornings in the 70s when I had to walk to school and it was like pitch black out trying to get out of bed in the morning. That was kind of horrible. And it seems to me that the authors of Prop 7 got it backwards. In other words, it seems that most people who have kids complain about the idea that they have to get their kids up an hour earlier in the spring and would have preferred that the time not change and we don't go to daylight savings time. That actually, the other thing about that seems like kind of a canard is, you know, that's going to be better, is that, you know, in 1915, we didn't have a 24/7 economy like we do now. Seems like more people are out at all hours of the day and night, and it doesn't really make that much of a difference to me, at least. So that's kind of my comment, and I'll take the response off there.
All right, and I thank you for the comment, Joseph. Let me go back to our KQED science reporter, Danielle Venton. What about Joseph's thoughts that maybe we got it backwards here? Danielle?
Well, there are some groups who would like to see year-round standard time. The problem is that would mean we wouldn't be making as much use of daylight in the summer, and the evenings would get darker sooner. I mean, parents are kind of all over the map in how they feel about daylight saving time in a way. I mean, they enjoy having the light in the evening, maybe if their kids are in sports. At the same time, they don't like the idea of, you know, and in the 70s, it was very unpopular for kids to go to school in the dark. I mean, something that I think should be part of this conversation is the idea that school should start at a later time. 7:30 start times, 8 a.m. start times.
I'm looking at some comments from listeners who essentially support that idea and say that's what we should be looking at here as well.
Yeah, yeah. And researchers agree that that would be better for developing teenage brains, to let kids sleep in a little bit longer.
We're coming up on a break, Danielle, but can you say anything about jet lag and daylight saving time?
Well, when we spring forward in March, we are all jet lagged about an hour, and so if your coworkers or your family is a little bit shorter, a little bit groggy, that's because we, as a society, are all collectively jet lagged.
And we're going to continue this discussion. And again, we do want to hear from you, and you can join us toll free at 866-733-6786 or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, or go to our website kqed.org/forum. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about California Proposition 7, which could make daylight saving time permanent or put us on the path toward that. And you may have some thoughts about it, and certainly many people do. In fact, around Halloween, this becomes a major issue for many people. We're talking with Danielle Venton, reporter and editor for KQED Science, and Dr. David Prerow, who's author of Seize the Daylight, the curious and contentious story of daylight saving time. Michael Downing is creative writing professor at Tufts University, author of Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Saving Time. And we're going to go to more of your callers, here. But I keep talking about some of these historical stories. And Michael Downing, let me go back to you. I'm kind of embarrassed about this, but Ohio University, which is my alma mater, has a story about a bar closing down at a certain time and causing a riot.
Well, they're not alone. There's always been a big question about what happens when we turn the clocks forward. Do we get an extra hour of drinking in bars where states have limits on the hours bars can serve? And in most states, it turned out that they weren't allowed to take that extra hour into account. But as you say, there have been more than one case of people on death row who have claimed that their life has been foreshortened by the clock change. And in each case of those that I've ever read about, the judge has ruled that the defendant and the guilty party has been given an extra hour at the end of his sentence in order to accommodate for the loss of that hour. So it does cause some really simple and some sort of nutty confusions.
Wasn't there also a story about an inheritance of twins and daylight saving time?
Do you know? I don't know that story.
Do you, Dr. Pereiro?
Yes, I do. When daylight saving time was being debated in the British Parliament in the early 1900s, one of the members of the House of Lords brought up this potential problem. That if there are two twins being born, and one is born, say, at 1:59, and the next one is born 2 minutes later, and it would be 2:01, but the clock goes back an hour, so they're born at 1:01, but the second twin is actually older than the first twin by the time on their birth certificate. And the problem in Britain at the time was there's a lot of inheritance rules had to do with the firstborn son, for example, inheriting the title and the estate.
There's a great word for that, primogeniture. That's what it is, yeah.
So that became a potential issue. And even though I don't know if it happened in Britain, I have been contacted myself by two or three pairs of twins who told me that they've been fighting their entire life about who's older because one was born first, but the one born second was born at an earlier clock time.
And, Danielle, let me go back to you because I said this comes up every Halloween, but there have been a lot of proposals in the past to extend daylight saving for more voters. Can you talk about that?
For more voters?
Yeah, to try to get more voters out.
Yeah, well,
increase those who come to the voting booths. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. If we extended daylight saving time farther into the fall and autumn months, you know, we're just more active whenever there is daylight. So it would mean more voters at the polls, more people out walking, playing golf, as was mentioned earlier. You know, it just seems like there's almost not enough daylight to go around. This is really just a discussion about whether we want the precious daylight in the winter stacked in the morning hours or in the afternoon hours. There's no way to get more light out of the sun, unfortunately.
Let me read some comments. I alluded before to a number of comments that were coming in about concern about shifting back with school times for kids, and this is exemplary, perhaps, of many of those. This is a listener who writes, if daylight saving time becomes permanent, school start must shift back 1 hour as well. Numerous studies confirm that students cannot function well early in the morning and end up sleeping too little. And here's Deneen, who says, I and every other parent of little ones that I have ever known would enthusiastically vote to end time changes. I really don't care which way it goes. Just stop changing it, please. Roger says, I don't care what time they pick. Just stop making me change the clock forwards and back. Switching like that is just plain crazy. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Here's Van, who says, why not just not do DST anymore, period? And a question for you, Danielle. Let me go to you on this. Jeff says, please cite the studies on which there are claims that there is scientific evidence to support this bill. The integrity of many such studies has come into question recently. And if we're going to pass a law that affects all of our lives so dramatically, I want real evidence, not stories from the dentist, as we heard from Kanson Chu earlier.
I can well understand that. There was a federal survey, I believe it was done by the Congressional Research Office a few years back, evaluating the energy saving and the health costs or benefits of daylight saving time, and I'll tweet that out in just a bit. And if the listener would like to follow me, I'm at Danielle Benton.
Okay, and we'll follow in with some more callers here. Let me go to you, Leslie. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi there. You know, I was so excited to hear this was on the ballot because I'm a fairly active person, and everybody I know in just an informal type of poll, when the time changes and it goes back to being dark in the, you know, late afternoon, early evening, everybody is depressed about it because everybody wants some time after work to get out, whether it's in the dog park, walking the dog, playing golf, whatever your sport is, you know, and we have such a problem with obesity and people's health, sitting in their cars, commuting all the time. People really need that extra time to get out and get some exercise. And in terms of the kids, When my daughter was young, the time change was horrific for little kids in preschool, kindergarten. Having to get them up an hour early and get to school was really tough on them, and sometimes took almost a week just to get, you know, the rhythm back. So I hope this passes. This would be great. People need more time outside of work for recreation.
Leslie, I thank you for that. I appreciate the comment. We'll let it stand, and we'll get another caller on here, and that's you. Dan, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I have always wondered about daylight savings time, and I'm hoping one of your guests can help clear this up. But it always seems to me that we go longer past the equinox in the fall than we go in the spring. Why is it unequal? Isn't the equinox the point where we have equal daylight and nighttime? Shouldn't they be an equal distance if we're concerned about health or anything else?
Yeah, can I go to you on this, Dr. Perro? David Perro?
Yeah, oh yes, I could tell you exactly the reasoning for that. I was involved working for the U.S. government in the largest study ever of the effects of daylight saving time. And we looked into the best times to make the time change. And it was decided that the negative of daylight saving time is the dark mornings. The positive is the lighter evenings. So we were trying to minimize the negative. So by minimizing the negative, we wanted to minimize the darker mornings. So to do that, we made the daylight saving time period symmetrical about the sunrise, not about the length of day, but about the sunrise. So the sunrise at the beginning of daylight saving time period should be more or less the same as the sunrise at the end. And that was the reasoning, to minimize the dark mornings rather than just worry about the length of day.
Michael Donnie, want to comment on this?
No, I think David's got it exactly right. And of course, our planet, you know, is in a perfect orb, and its elliptical path around the sun makes it hard to get these measurements to be exact according to any single measure. So I think David's got it exactly right on how we first got to this idea of what are we trying to accomplish with daylight saving.
Michael Donning's book, again, is Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Saving Time. And David Perro's book is Seize the Daylight, The Curious and Contentious Story of Daylight Saving Time. We'll get more of your calls on. And if you'd like to join the conversation or get your own thoughts in here, it's 866-733-6786. We go to you next. Patricia, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I am going to actually say that Leslie sort of, she said all that I wanted to say, or she certainly, I agree with her, that it's so much better, I think, for all of us to have an extra sunlight at the end of the day. And I remember a study, and I'm going to be really foggy on this, I think it was out of Finland, where they were trying to study the levels of depression, and people went into a greater depression when, in fact, when it was darker earlier in the days. I'll just close with this. I do think it's a great idea to have one time all year round, because it makes no sense for us to do this twice a year. But I would like to also say that I think it's one of the fun things to do at this time of year is to ask people why we change our clocks twice a year. I just put that out there because I think I've come up with or heard some of the funniest things, but they always talk about the farmers. So I don't know if your guests will comment on that, because I don't understand why the farmers are part of this. Anyway, I'll end with that.
I want to get to the farmers, because, I mean, but first let me go to Daniel Venton on this. Maybe you can shed some light on the dark year and depression and its Finnish study, Daniel.
I'm not familiar with the Finnish study, but you know, seasonal affective disorder is a very common condition when when you know, more dark, less daylight affects many of us. And researchers who I spoke to suggest getting out in the sunlight about half an hour a day if that is something that affects you. Now, some people enjoy the lighter mornings because they exercise in the morning. Many people enjoy the lighter evenings. It's, you know, as we've said, there's no way to have both. There's only so much daylight. One idea could be if all of our schedules could be a little bit more flexible, and then we could, you know, just use the daylight at the time that works best for us. That could almost be a simpler solution than worrying about clocks changing twice a year.
Well, let me go to you, Michael Dunning, if I may, on this whole question of the farmers. They were kind of up in pitchforks during the Nixon administration.
They've been up in pitchforks since the beginning of the 20th century when this was first proposed. Most Americans grow up with the myth that we do it for the farmers. And like everything else with daylight saving, it's entirely inverted. The farmers from the beginning hated daylight saving. Farmers actually used morning sunlight. So when they had, let's say, a sunrise at 6 o'clock in the morning and they had to get their crops harvested into markets at 9 o'clock, they had 3 hours. When the clocks went forward by an hour, they had to do the same amount of work in 2 hours. Farmers hated daylight saving, and in fact, they were the principal reason we never had a national peacetime daylight saving law until 1966. And that's because the farm lobby is no longer as powerful as it once was. In fact, a very moving statistic in this is simple, goes like this. By the year 2000, there were more Americans living on golf courses than there were Americans living on farms.
Yeah, well,
and the farmers lost.
Agribusiness has taken its toll.
That's right.
I'm looking at a comment from a listener who says, leave it at standard time, but have business and school adjust operating hours. And another comment from a listener named Richard who says, the argument that we must keep daylight savings time so that children don't go to school in the dark is absurd. Arizona does not have daylight savings time. The European Union is getting rid of it this year. And children in northern Alaska and all the Scandinavian countries go to school in the dark all winter and always have. All that notwithstanding, though, Dr. Perro, I remember reading about daylight saving time during the Nixon administration. In addition to concern about children getting up in the dark, there were actually some deaths in Florida that were attributed to that, weren't there?
That's right. There was several incidents of children being killed on the way to school in the dark. And these caused national debate or national interest because of the fact that it was during it was when we had the year-round daylight saving time. And a lot of people thought that if we didn't have daylight saving time in the winter, those children would have been safe. So they became very, very major issues at the time, every time there was an accident involving children going to school in the morning.
And let me bring more callers aboard here. We go next to an Oakland caller, Jim. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. My comment is mostly about the fact that time zones kind of give us the idea that this is the standard time and daylight savings time is a modification of our standard time. When if you were actually to use a sundial, daylight savings time here on the West Coast, Oakland especially, would actually line up better with our local meridian.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of questions about and comments about the changing time zones. Danielle, you want to help us out here?
Could you summarize the question again?
He just wanted to know about the problem with time zones, that really creates a problem and a challenge if you're going to go over to daylight savings time constantly.
You know, I mean, we would be out of sync with some of with other states and their time zones, and that could create some confusion for scheduling meetings, for airline flights. But other states, such as Arizona, don't switch their clocks, and we likely would be able to adjust.
Yeah, a comment from a listener says, I support doing away with daylight saving time like Arizona, but not changing time zones. If I wanted to live in a state in the mountain time zone, I'd move to Colorado. Let's move to another caller, and we'll get Mitchell on next. Mitchell, you're on. Mikhail, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mikhail.
Hi there. I was just going to point out that the company I work with, we deal with software, and also the product itself has to log the time. And you guys were just talking about Arizona, and it's kind of a hassle for the developers to have to deal with certain states, and they switch, and other states right next to them do not. Like right now, we're actually on the same time zone as Arizona, but in a month we won't be. And they have to factor that in state by state. So it's actually, it costs the software industry time and money.
Well, I thank you for that call, Mikhail. And I should say here that when we're talking about Arizona broadly, we should at least add an important footnote here. This holds true in Arizona, but not in the Navajo Nation, which does not recognize daylight saving time. Just wanted to point that out because they are in Arizona. Michelle says instead of springing forward or falling back 1 hour twice a year, why not permanently split the difference by half an hour and call it a day? And here's Brian who says, I just read Brian's before. Let me go to some more of our calls and let's go Well, actually, let me go next to you, Michael Downing, because when we look back at the whole history that's unfurled with daylight saving time, there is, as David Perow points out in his subtitle, a great deal of contentiousness, and that contentiousness is still very much with us.
Well, you know, part of the contentiousness comes from the whole, the very name of daylight saving and precisely what we're saving. And I do think this is relevant, particularly to California. There has always been a debate about whether any real energy was ever saved. And the amounts, as David pointed out, tend to be marginal at best. Many new researchers would say we've never saved any energy. But there's an important point in California that the rest of the country then found out. In 1930, California had the first referendum on daylight saving. And the principal supporter of that referendum, who paid for it, it was the most expensive referendum in history to that point, was the petroleum industry. Because early on, the petroleum industry realized if you give Americans more daylight, we will go out to the ballpark and the mall, but we don't walk there. We drive. Daylight saving increases gasoline consumption, and it's a really important factor. It's not minor. The new most important lobby for daylight saving, single one, is the National Association of Convenience Stores. That's not because people stop and buy more Hershey bars. It's because Americans buy 75 to 80% of their gasoline at those convenience stores. And every year on Capitol Hill, the National Association of Convenience Stores gives a daylight saving party to thank Congress for daylight saving.
Well, let me go back to you, David Perow, and follow up on something from Michael Downing's recent comment he just made. And that is it true and at this point axiomatic that energy and all these promised energy savings have actually never really materialized?
Well, I think there definitely were studies in World War I and World War II showing energy savings. There were studies. In fact, I was involved with this study in the that looked at these at the energy savings after the year-round daylight saving time in the 1970s, and so there were definitely findings of energy savings all throughout history. And as I said, even in 2007, the Energy Department found a saving. There are some studies that show less of a saving, even no saving, but those are smaller studies. So it is still used around the world to save energy. A lot of countries that don't have daylight saving time, when they have an energy crisis, put it in for a short time or for until the energy crisis is over. So that issue is debatable, but I still think there's a lot of evidence that there is a saving of energy.
David Perow, let me go back to something I alluded to before, and I'd like you to pretty much give us the story here, if you could. I mentioned the manslaughter case, which hinged on daylight saving time here in California back in 1997. And Cal, one of our listeners, for example, says, what was that case which hinged on it? Can you talk to it, Dr. Perow?
I have to say that I'm not familiar with that case.
Are you, Michael Downing?
No, I know the earlier case in Chicago, which was made famous by Hemingway, which was a similar case where a man was convicted of murder and then had to be given an extra hour.
I'll have to go back and see the reference on that, because I remember reading that it was a fact that daylight saving time turned a case around here in California, a manslaughter case. You want to talk a little bit more about the Chicago case, though?
Yeah, well, it's a delightful story because it really hinges on the fact that a man was convicted of murder, and he was convicted during the daylight period. And so he went to the judge afterwards, and it was 6 months later, and he said that he had been robbed of an hour of his life. And it was one of several new cases that were threatening the whole daylight project, because at that point there was no national bill. And it was sort of taken up as a national cause. This poor guy who was about to be killed, shaved, you know, bad enough he was going to be hung, but he was going to be have an extra hour shaved off his life. And that gave rise to a number of other cases, including the ones you alluded to earlier, with bar openings and who owned the hour that the government was taking away from people.
Yeah, I mentioned that in my alma mater. And here's another comment about the Buckeye State, where I hail from. Cheryl says, A daylight saving anecdote. I grew up in an Ohio farm county, excuse me, and we stayed on slow time while our Cleveland media was on fast time. It was confusing, to say the least. Why mess with nature? We're going to go to more of your calls, and let's go next to a caller in Sacramento. Pat, join us.
Yes. As I recall, in World War II in Wisconsin, we had double daylight saving time, and I do recall going to school in the dark.
Okay. Appreciate that memory, Pat, and it's good to hear from you this morning. And we'll go right on to another caller, and that's a San Jose caller. Rule, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, my question is about the alignment of daylight saving when it kicks in internationally. Europe kicks in on a different day than the U.S., and then Latin America, who also go the other way around, they kick in on yet another day. Has there been any alignment internationally to actually get those dates aligned? Because that would make things much more easy with scheduling meetings and not messing up with calendars.
Do we know about move toward alignment, Dr. Perot? I'll go to you on this.
Yes, I was a consultant to the British Parliament on daylight saving time, and I mentioned that why can't the Europeans or other places in the world, you know, sink in with the United States? And the problem is that each area chooses their own.
That's S-Y-N-C-H, sink in, yes.
And it's very difficult to get them all to agree, and so they said that they wouldn't. That they didn't think it was likely that the. In fact, when we changed our time period, DST period, in 2007, we used to start after the Europeans, and now we start before the Europeans. So we sort of leapfrogged them, and so each area makes the. But what happens is countries near each other, like Canada, uses the same period as the U.S., and so does Mexico, and European Union all uses the same period. So places near each other tend to use the same periods, but places far away tend to not coordinate.
Once again, David Perot is the author of Seize the Daylight, the Curious and Contentious Story of Daylight Saving Time. Here's another caller joining us, and joining us from Concord. Ingrid, you want to give us your take on this, please?
Yes, thank you, and I wanted to find out for myself, because health-wise I always felt bad at the time change. And so I made a paper circle and pinched that hour away, and I realized we're running on 23 hours a day instead of the 24. And the way the biorhythm goes is that every 2 hours, the energy in the body changes from one organ to the other. And during the time that we're taking that hour away, it's the liver time, and it's being shortened by an hour. So that's where a lot of the health commotion is coming from. So I would like to suggest standard time and then adjust our schedules instead of the clocks.
Ingrid, I thank you for that call, and let me go back to Danielle Venton. Thoughts from you, Danielle, in response to Ingrid's call?
Yeah, I mean, So it is true that each cell in our body has a daily cycle, and this helps our body get ready for when it's time to rest, when it's time to wake up, when it's time to digest, when it's time to be active. And when we disrupt those cycles by being jet lagged or losing an hour of sleep or doing shift work, those cycles are thrown out of alignment and are sort of fighting for, you know, your body might be saying, it's time to digest. No, it's time to be active. No, it's time to sleep. And that does make us feel ill. It can make us feel sick, and it takes a while for our body to get back on track.
Danielle Venton is reporter and editor for KQED Science. Let me thank Ingrid for her call and bring on Eric next. Eric, join us. Eric, are you there?
Oh, yeah, hi. Yeah, so I have a couple comments. Real quick, first...
You've given us a lesson in losing time here, Eric. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, all right. Time zones are arranged around political boundaries, which distort what happens and gets exacerbated with time changes. For example, the sun rises about 90 minutes earlier in Tahoe than in Eureka. That's one thing, because California is tilted, and it's a political boundary. So that's one of the peculiarities of time zones, is that they're political rather than meridian. Second, in my most humble opinion, I think change is good. People don't have enough change, and so time changes are good. And then third, the energy guy from Cal, whose name I can't remember, had a good column explaining why we need to keep our time zones straight. It was in the Chronicle last week.
Oh, was that Severin Borenstein?
Yeah.
I think I saw that. Well, let me go back to you, Dr. Pereira, on this. We're talking about time zones again. How much of that is political, as you see it?
Well, the time zones were set up to be every 15 degrees, theoretically, and then the boundaries were made to be convenient for people to remember and to know, and so they did it by state to state. And so right now the boundaries are more or less through the states, though many states have the boundary going through them. But the boundary should be every 15 degrees around the world, because 15 times 24 is 360, which is how many degrees there are to go around the world.
Yeah, but maybe you can't gerrymander time zones, at least. Rest assured of that. By the way, I want to end with a tweet here from James, who reminds us that Prop 7 doesn't actually remove daylight savings time. It just allows the state to change it in the future. That is correct. And let me thank all of our guests this morning, Kanson Chu, who joined us earlier, California Assemblyman who authored this bill, and our own Danielle Venton. Thank you, Danielle, for being with us. Good to have you.
Thank you, Michael.
Danielle Venton, again, is KQED reporter for science. And we also had Michael Downing. Thank you for being part of the program, Michael Downing.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks.
Michael Downing's book is Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Savings Time. And thanks to Dr. David Pereira. Good to have you with us as well. Thank you.
Michael.
Dr. Pereira is the author of Seize the Daylight, The Curious and Contentious Story of Daylight Saving Time. We're here with you, well, fixed time, 9 to 11 every morning. Stay tuned for more on KQED. I'm Michael Krasny.